Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment.
Hi, everyone. I am Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. For those of you who are not familiar with this forum, it is intended to share information on how we can, in effect, evaluate the significance of the choices in our lives as to whether or not those choices lead to a healthier or a more diseased state, both emotionally and physically and environmentally. It's a big topic and one that I've been broadcasting on non-commercial radio for over 24 years. Happy to do that. Started when I was very young and still going, and I don't even believe that I've touched 1% of all the information that's available. There's just more information than what we have time to share. So I try to take the issues that affect large groups of people in the audience who generally are not given the opportunity to know what these issues are. And that's what I'm going to do today. I'll also be taking calls today, time permitting. And I'll only be able to take calls from people in the tri-state New York area. Now, generally, when I appear on the KPFA, on Roy of Hollywood, KPFK, I should say, in Roy of Hollywood, I take calls there just for that audience, or WPFW on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and Sunday evenings, 4 days a week, and I try to take calls there. Very shortly, however, I'm working on a way that we can take calls all over the country, because now this show can be heard all over the world, anytime, 24 hours a day, a rather unique service, and it's free. I didn't even know it existed. I only found out when someone in the audience sent me an email from overseas that they were listening to a program I'd done 2 weeks before that. And I'm thinking, how they hear it? So I contacted the person. They said, oh, there's a service. And you type it in on your computer, on the web and the internet, and it connects you. And then you get all these programs you've done. And then you can hear them, either live at noon or in any of the other ones, many other day. And I thought, what a nice way not to have to miss something that you feel is important. So if you go to GaryNull.com, that's www.GaryNull, that's GaryNull.com, right up there, and I'm redesigning my whole site now, right there is the information. So this way you can listen anywhere at any time. I'm not in New York now. In fact, I'm in the midst of a major trip that has many purposes. Determining what are some of the contributing issues that allow people in different parts of the world to live a longer and healthier life. What can I bring back that might help us live a longer life? How people in Cuba are being treated for many degenerative diseases, more successfully so than in the United States, especially when you consider that they do not have what the orthodox mind would say would be the advantages of our medical model. Well, crisis for them has actually provided opportunity to use what they do have, and that is all their herbs. In fact, Cuba has one of the highest, if not the highest, literacy rate in the world. You find a person that's selling fruit on the street is also a medical doctor at the university. And I'm talking about with rigorous training. And none of the schools, none of the educational system is easy. It far surpasses ours in difficulty. And I'm interviewing a whole series of their people in medicine and nutrition and public health. And under great deprivation, what we take for granted, what we would throw away in a day, some of these people would consider a feast. And yet, you ought to really take a look at their AIDS clinics, AIDS sanitariums. I'll be filming there on Monday in an AIDS sanitarium and a longevity center in the middle. I really wasn't fully aware of how large Cuba is. It's humongous. It's almost the size of California. Anyhow, I'll be doing, if all goes well, and we're working on the technology, some live reports, and then off to South Africa to do an interview with Mbeki, the president, on the power of economic interests, including the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, pharmaceutical industries, including Glaxo, Wellcome, the makers of AZT, Vice President Gore, Bill Clinton, and others who pressured them into accepting mandatory testing, mandatory use of AZT if a pregnant woman is shown to be HIV positive, and how all this came together against what he considered the better judgment of it. And he has had to acquiesce on many points, but still hold strong on certain ones, and I'll be bringing back the latest on that, and plus visiting some what they consider the current epicenter of AIDS. And I'll be filming at the same time. I'm not taking a crew with me. I'm just traveling alone. But I take my own film camera so I can film all this. So I'll be doing that. And then stopping off in three other countries, meeting with prime ministers to see if I can't work with them. This is at their invitation, by the way, not mine. Set up alternative AIDS healing programs to show that there are more than just pharmaceutical approaches to the subject of AIDS. So that's just over the next 2 weeks. And then I'll be back and for 2 days and then back out again. It's a very busy time. So wherever possible and whenever possible, I'll be doing the show live vis-a-vis the wonder of our technology. Otherwise, I have pre-recorded certain programs that you have not heard before in various series, and I'll be airing those when I'm not available for technical hookup. Now, let me continue where I left off yesterday and expand on it a little further. We are, by anyone's definition, overly medicated as a society. So first, let's look at the larger picture. What is it we're trying to achieve? We're trying to achieve health, but we're not focusing upon what contributes to a lack of health. We've assumed that disease and health both can come from the same medical model. They cannot. That model, at best, is limited to just medicine treating disease, and even that is challengeable upon the efficacy and safety of the techniques that are currently being used. With all the trillions, now it's into the trillions of dollars spent on the fight for improving the chance of a person living with a disease, we have very little to show in the way of results that are constructive. And yet in other cultures where they do not use our model, they're having better results across the board. We have no model for health. Historically, for us, health was someone who was physically fit. Well, look at Arnold Schwarzenegger, a man who certainly is fit muscularly wise, but how far could he go without being fatigued? He smokes cigars, he drank, eats meat, but he has a lot of muscles. Well, he also has a very sick heart and had a heart operation. How many people look all right on the outside are extremely toxic on the inside? How many people smile on the outside and cry on the inside? We have not examined close enough what it means to be healthy. And so, in effect, we have to decide where we're going to put our trust. If you put your trust in one paradigm, then what you're told to do to prevent disease is moderation in all things. Not cessation, just moderation. And in fact, the very people, the AMA and medical doctors, encourage women for over 50 years to smoke to calm their nerves. Those same doctors today would not tell you to smoke to calm your nerves, but they'd tell you to take a tranquilizer to calm your nerves. In point of fact, the tranquilizer is equally as dangerous as cigarette smoking. It just manifests in a different way. And so we're not even aware consciously of how we participate in getting sick. We're far, far too frenetic. Our lifestyle is too fast-paced. We are not enjoying this. And we become so used to being overly stimulated by outside sources that in order for someone to compete for our attention and our dollar, they have to supersede the previous jolt. So now we're getting super stimulated in excess of anything that is reasonable or even safe. We're getting to the point where our lives are so repetitious and so overwhelmingly stressful that we will pay attention to the most exaggerated and exhibitionistic of all individuals. It reduces intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually our values substantially. And yet when you're in other cultures, when you travel, as I do so often, and you have a chance to see people who are not hooked into the latest reality show, and mark my words, these reality shows are going to go to a place where eventually people are going to have to hurt each other. They're going to have to abuse each other. I predict that within the next 2 years, if they continue, they will intentionally invite people to participate who are known to be violent. And this will be a form of entertainment, much like the movie Rollerball. That's reality today. Something just normal would no longer be considered exciting enough to get our attention. And this is what we're teaching our youth. Fortunately, and I say it's really fortunate, many of our youth have rejected our values. They've rejected the meaninglessness of our lives. They see that so many of the baby boomers have filled their lives with things, positions, responsibilities, dedicated ourselves to our own egos and our insecurities, and they see it. Isn't it interesting that it frequently takes a youth to see the follies of an adult? In the adult, the more educated they are, generally, the more self-righteous they are in defending what it is they're educated about. They don't see the flexibility and openness. And so they're taking a look and saying, my God, where is there another model of behavior? Because the baby boomers are the most dysfunctional group in American history. Really are. There is no lines any longer that are not transcended by our own greed and need for attention and need for love and need for security and need for some identity, need for something in our lives just to make us be where we're alive. Because the Land Rovers and the apartments and the houses and the families and the education, and it just wasn't enough. Well, if it's not enough, then nothing we're going to do is be enough. But we don't do a different thing. We just think we have to keep using the same tools, just more. Just work harder, more. Well, how hard can you work? How much more can you work? Take a look at how much time you have spent trying to prove something, and in the end, what do you have to show for it? An exhausted, worn-out body that's more susceptible now than ever before to all the diseases, viruses, and bacteria, fatigue, adrenal and burnout, blood sugar imbalances, metabolic imbalances, and on top of that, aging very rapidly. So what do we do? One thing we do is we just stop for a moment and ask ourselves, where have we gone wrong, and let go of the ego so we can be honest in the detachment to see our mistakes. If you cannot detach the ego, how in the world are you going to correct what it has caused? The most dangerous thing we have in our society today are egos that have no limits on what they will do in their own self-interest without a consequence to how it impacts upon others. Now, in this process, we have allowed our children, over 7 million of our children, to be considered diseases. Now, why are they diseases? Is there anything genetically wrong with them? No. Not at all. What's wrong with them is they have not perfected the art of being us exactly as we need them to be, with our ambition, our desire, our drive, our motivation, our personality, our capacity to manipulate or control a moment. And therefore, our disappointments, either minor or major as they may be, can be reflected in a challenge or shyness or aggressiveness or not allowing the child to be a child. We're the only generation in American history that had an entire 25-year period where children just couldn't be children. They had to be children with a purpose, our purpose. Now we're seeing the results of that. We tried to push them to be too much, too soon, and we needed that. From the baseball fathers to the mothers who had every committee in the world they could be on, and everybody was exhausted, and everybody ran everyone. It was just like the, you know, bell went off in the morning. It was like cockroaches scurrying around to see which exit they could take. That's not a way for a family to live, but that was the way that everyone else was doing it. If you got to get ahead, then you got to do what everyone else. Everyone was doing the same thing to try to get the same place, that place where they could be acknowledged. Gee, what a great dad you are. What a great parent you are. Look at your my son, my daughter went here, went there, did this, did that. Look at their trophies. Look at their awards. Look at their achievements. You know, that's just an extension of us, you know, because we did it and we wanted them to. We wanted the best for them and we gave them everything and we sacrificed completely for them. And now look at them. Look at them. Prozac, Ritalin, Livox, Paxil. Stigmatized for life. That's the legacy that baby boomers have given. That you cannot deny. It is a reality. It is a fact. Irrefutable. 7 million. We're not talking about 7,000, which would be bad enough. 7 million. In effect, we have deemed an entire generation incapable of functioning without a diagnosis. The psychologists were there to help. They needed to justify their pathetic existence. The psychoanalysts, who have no scientific background whatsoever, but they believed in Freud. And take a look at Freud. Take a look at Jung. You talk about two dysfunctional, and very erratic behavioral persons. You've got them. Adler, Jung. No matter what the person was that you were believing they had the answer, now you had to look at everyone as if their problem fit into your education. So everyone had to be dysfunctional at some level if they were sitting across from you, and they had to be dysfunctional way that you could help them. Therefore, you could only help them with the tool you had. Therefore, you had to diagnose them with what you were told would be appropriate diagnosis. What if you were wrong? What if that person who was sitting across from you wasn't hyperactive because they had a brain abnormality? What if they were hyper because they were just highly energized? Well, you as a psychiatrist say, well, that's nonsense. The average American isn't highly energized. That's correct, because you burned out their adrenal glands with coffee and sugar and stress. But we're not all born equal. That's one of those politically contrived nice things to say. We're all equal. No one's equal. We all have the same potential. No, we don't. Or we'd all end up doing similar things, and we don't. We're all gifted, yes. But our gift is unique in our own. One of the meanings of our life is to find that gift and to master it and then to share it. But it's not our gift that we're trying to find. It's someone else telling us what they want our gift to be and how then to go about mastering it. So now we have a kid that could be extremely gifted and honoring it, and who's then made to believe that there's something wrong with them. And we have people who are just naturally, completely, normally less outgoing. They're called adaptive supportives as a life energy. A point of fact, they're the average person. But now we've made being an average person who doesn't feel comfortable taking charge, standing out, being outspoken, we've made them feel as if there's something wrong with them. So of course a psychiatrist came in and said, it's a brain disease. Shyness is a disease, and we have the cure. We have a drug. And so now we've made everybody with every quality and characteristic seem like they're diseased. Ours was the first generation that achieved something that had not been done up to this point, virtually pathologizing life. There is nothing you can do in this world that cannot be pathologized today. If you doubt me, take the time that I've taken, read every page as I've read of the psychiatric manual for diagnostic and statistical analysis, and you'll see that every behavior fits in there. Now you say, well, surely someone would have challenged that. No, no one challenged it within the paradigm, and those who did were excluded. Interesting thing you do. You coerce people to accept what you say is right. Anyone who challenges you as being right then is threatened, intimidated, or destroyed. So then there's only people like yourself making choices. And anyone who could have given balance no longer is a part of the decision-making process. That's why you have no reformers in psychiatry, psychology, medicine. They would have been pushed out. First warned, then threatened, then destroyed. There is a long litany of individuals who've tried and have failed. It doesn't take long for weaker minds, unless affirmative spirits, to see, gee, if that's the punishment I get for standing out and speaking up, I think I'm going to continue getting rewarded for keeping quiet and playing along. The trouble is, what is the cost? Well, the cost, first of all, is our children. Then you've got people who have absolutely no sense of connectedness, who come along and see some children who are on medications that they should never have been on because they had parents they should never have had. And there are 7 million orphaned children in the United States. Someone made mistakes. 14 million people made mistakes to have those 7 children. That's just 7 million children who are orphaned. Then you got 7 million more children who are on drugs, prescription drugs, every day. And imagine the problems that causes. Start adding it up, you got to wonder who's a good parent left. And now you got school teachers who wake up each day, many, not all, and think it's just great that they are in a position of power beyond just trying to instruct something out of a textbook. Now they can actually pay doctor, determine any behavior. It's kind of nice when you think about it, walking into a classroom where everyone's on drugs. Not heroin or cocaine, but a class 2 drug, similar to heroin, cocaine. But this one puts them into a controlled state. And you don't have to worry about anyone fidgeting, blurting out an answer, dominating. They've been chemically lobotomized. They've been neutered. They've been castrated. There'll be no dominance, just complacency. Nice classroom, right? Well, that's what's occurring. And then some of those kids start to have effects from the drugs. And they can no longer distinguish between appropriate and inappropriate behavior. And there's an anger and a rage that seethes within them. And one day they wake up thinking, today's day that I'm just going to go kill someone. And so, where before they would never have considered it, never done it, now their behavior is so altered, their perception of right and wrong, of morality, is so blocked that they take a gun, they go into school, and they take people that were their friends at one time, and they shoot them. Then they shoot themselves. And the first thing that happens is the reactionaries say, my God, our schools and kids are a problem. More laws. And then you have a group of people, led by Hillary and her village idiots, who decide, we know best how to raise children. I guess you do. Look at your family. Model of good ethical moral behavior. And all the others out of Washington, D.C. A pantheon of virtue. So they create rules to make it so difficult. These are the same people who gave us mandatory vaccination. And now, soon in the future, bet your life on it, mandatory AIDS testing and an AIDS vaccine. Now these are the people who have taken away the real core curriculum that does allow children a chance to learn and replaced it with core curriculum that disenfranchises both the family and the child from anything that is meaningful in a constructing of a life. Now, all children are suspect. So we need greater rules. And now your child is perceived when they walk into a school as a danger. And that's the way it's been. The media has done all it can as guardians of the gates to make sure that this is the message it's given. You never have to confuse the ethic of the media in helping to challenge the inappropriate behaviors within paradigms for its resilience to maintaining the status quo. What do they have to say about Luke Woodham, October 1st, 1997? 16 years old, started shooting in his school cafeteria in Pearl, Mississippi. He killed two students, including his ex-girlfriend, and wounded seven others. Then he killed his mother. He was sentenced to life in prison. And later accused six friends of conspiracy. He was on medication, tranquilizers. December 1st, 1997, at Heath High School in West Pudak, Kentucky, Michael Carneal, 14, found students coming out of a prayer meeting. Using a stolen pistol, he shot eight of these students, killed three. December 15, 1997, Joseph Todd, 14, was arrested in the shooting of two students outside their high school in Stamps, Arkansas. April 24, 1998, Andrew Wurst, 14, shot and killed his science teacher at an eighth grade dance at the high school in Edinburgh, Pennsylvania. May 19, 1998, several days before graduating, honor student Jacob Davis, 18, allegedly shot and killed Robert Creason, a classmate at Lincoln County High School in Fayetteville, Tennessee. A CNN story dated May 21, 1998, authored by its Justice Department correspondent Pierre Thomas, offered the following statistics. Quote, 10% of the nation's schools reported one or more violent crimes in 1996-97 school year, including murder, suicide, rape, robbery, fights involving weapons, unquote. Even if these CNN figures are self-serving and overblown, they point to a chilling landscape. The bulk of the American media appears afraid to go after psychiatric drugs as a cause of violent crime. This fear stems in part from the sure knowledge that expert attack dogs are waiting. They have an enormous war chest from the pharmaceutical companies. There are doctors and researchers who've seen the truth, know the truth about these drugs and what they do. It's in their journals and peer-reviewed journals, but they're afraid to stand up and speak out. For the very reason I mentioned earlier, we will punish any reformers. No one's going to threaten the profits, careers, and reputations of the pharmaceutical industry. And the federal government has done nothing except protect them. According to Dr. Peter Bregan, from the initial studies, it was also apparent that a small percentage of Prozac patients became psychotic. Prozac, in fact, endured a rocky road in the press. Stories on it rarely appear now. The major media have backed off. On February 7th, 1991, a rare article by Amy Marcus in the Wall Street Journal on Prozac with a headline, Murder Trial Introduces Prozac Defense. She wrote, a spate of murder trials in which defendants claim they became violent when they took the antidepressant Prozac are imposing new problems for the drug's maker, Eli Lilly, unquote. Also on February 7, 1991, the New York Times ran a Prozac piece headed, Suicidal Behavior Tied Again to Drug, Does Antidepressant Prompt Violence? Unquote. In his landmark book, which I highly recommend, called Toxic Psychiatry, Dr. Peter Bregan mentions that put together a group of individuals who had become compulsively self-destructive and murderous after taking Prozac. And the clamorous telephone and audience response of the show he's on when that did confirm how many other people out there recognize this problem. Bregan also cites a troubling study by Dr. Teicher from the February 1990 American Journal of Psychiatry, Volume 147, page 207, which reports on, quote, six depressed patients previously free of suicidal ideation who develop intense, violent, suicidal preoccupations after just 2 to 7 weeks of fluoxetine, which is Prozac treatment. The suicidal preoccupations lasted for 3 months after they stopped taking the drug. Now, how many people are at risk of these suicidal or homicidal thoughts when they're on the drug? No one knows. One of the brochures put out by Eli Lilly, dated August 31st, 1990, stated that it was, quote, adding suicidal ideation to the adverse effects section of the Prozac product information, unquote. An earlier study by Joseph Lipinski in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry indicates that in 5 examined cases, people on Prozac develop what is called akesthesia. Symptoms include intense anxiety, the inability to sleep, the jerking of extremities, the bicycling in bed, or just turning around and around. And Peter Bregan comments that akesthesia may also contribute to the drug's tendency to cause self-destructive or violent tendencies. Akesthesia can become the equivalent of biochemical torture and could possibly tip someone over the edge into self-destruction or violent behavior. The Public Citizen Research Group reports in their health newsletter, quote, akesthesia are symptoms of restlessness, constant pacing, and purposeless movements of the feet and legs may occur in 25% of the patients on Prozac, unquote. The well-known publication California Lawyer, in an article titled Protecting Prozac, details some of the suspect maneuvers of Eli Lilly in his handling of suits against Prozac. California Lawyer also mentions other highly qualified critics of the drug. Dr. David Healy, MD, an internationally renowned psychopharmacologist, has stated in sworn deposition that contrary to Eli Lilly's view, there is a plausible cause and effect relationship between Prozac and suicidal, homicidal events. An epidemiological study published in 1995 by the British Medical Journal also links Prozac with increased suicide risk. Now, we have to understand that the major media and the legislatures have done nothing about this. And yet, the only thing they do is not stop Eli Lilly from what they're doing. Instead, they attack the children as if all of our children are at risk of creating a crime. When pressed, proponents of the SSRI drugs sometimes say, well, the benefits from the general population far outweigh the risk, or maybe in 1 or 2 tragic cases the dose prescribed was too high. Nonsense. A shocking re-review study called Antidepressants for Children, written by Rhoda Fisher and Seymour Fisher and published in the Journal of Nervous and Mental Diseases, Volume 184, 1996, concludes, quote, despite unanimous literature of double-blind studies indicating that antidepressants are no more effective than placebos in treating depression in children and adolescents, such medications continue to be in wide use, unquote. Let me state that again so you're very clear on what was said. If you look at all the double-blind studies out there in the scientific literature, there's no reason to be giving any children, these antidepressants. They don't work. They don't work, but they do cause problems. There are other studies. In the Journal of the American Journal of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, Volume 30, an article entitled Emergence of Self-Destructive Phenomena in Children and Adolescents During Fluoxetine, which is Prozac Treatment, written by Dr. King and Riddle and Associates, reports self-destructive phenomena in 14% of the children and adolescents in the study who had treatment with Prozac for obsessive-compulsive disorder. In the Journal of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, in the July 1991 issue, Dr. Kosumiya describes a 13-year-old boy who was on Prozac as full of energy, hyperactive, and clown-like, but who developed into sudden violent actions which were totally unlike him. in the Journal of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, September 1991, author Lawrence Jerome reports the case of a 10-year-old who moved with his family to a new location. Becoming depressed, the boy was put on Prozac by the doctor because he didn't like moving. Well, the boy was then, quote, hyperactive, agitated, and irritable, and made a somewhat grandiose assessment of his own abilities. He called a stranger on the phone and said he was going to kill him. The Prozac was stopped and the symptoms disappeared. That's Prozac. Let's take a look at Ritalin. Ritalin, in my opinion, should be banned. It should never be used on a child. There is no justification. But then again, I believe that most psychiatric drugs should be banned, and I believe psychiatrists should be banned. It is one of the most worthless professions there is, the way it is done. And I'm just appalled at the lack of intellectual honesty within our scientific and medical communities for not seeing this smoke and mirrors routine that they put on as if they actually know something. A December 1st, 1996, Cox News Service news story by Gary Kane states, quote, scores of young men and women across the country are learning that the Ritalin they took as teenagers is stopping them from serving their country or starting a military career. Kane continues, all branches of the armed forces reject potential enlistees who use Ritalin or similar behavior-modifying medications. And the people who took Ritalin as teenagers to treat ADD, an inhibitor of academic skills, are rejected from military service even if they are no longer taking the medication, unquote. Ritalin is manufactured by Novartis, and it's the close cousin to Speed, and it's given to perhaps about 6 million American school children for a condition that I do not believe exists. I've never seen any scientific evidence to justify it, called attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. There is no proof that I have found anywhere in the scientific literature of an organic cause. And yet we're told it's a disease caused in young boys. Statistically, you could have zero in one town and 40% in another town. So evidently, it is a very unique disease in that it must spread in the night and infect some children and not others. And it generally affects children who are in certain socioeconomic brackets. So therefore, if you're rich enough, your kids never suffer from attention deficit disorder. But if you're upper rich or moderately rich, your children do. If you're middle class, they're the biggest single group. And it's also ethnic. So it's a disease that discriminates against certain ethics, certain ages, certain economics. Now, if you saw all the flaws in this argument, you would say, well, hold on a second. What do you mean? A disease that will only get you if you have a certain cultural background? Yeah. You say, but that's stupid. That's not possible. Of course it's not. But you know it, and I know it, but school teachers don't. Pediatricians don't. And most parents don't. And psychiatrists certainly don't. So what is it we know they don't? It's not what we know or don't know. It's what we're willing to accept without challenge. There is a pharmaceutical bonanza out there. Even Ritalin's manufacturer warns that, quote, frank psychotic episodes can occur, unquote. And that's from the Physician's Desk reference, Medical Economics Company. Let me go back to Dr. Peter Bregan, referring to an official directory of psychiatric disorders, the DMS-3R, writes that withdrawal from amphetamine-type drugs that includes Ritalin can cause depression, anxiety, irritability, sleep deprivation, fatigue, and agitation. The individual may become suicidal in response to the depression. So, here is the bad news. Put your kid on Ritalin, and it can cause suicidal ideation, aggressiveness, and homicidal tendencies. Take your kid off Ritalin, and it can cause suicidal ideation, aggression, depression, anxiety, irritability, and sleep problems, fatigue, and agitation. Well, which is better? To have all those be on the drug or have all those as you're taking them off the drug? Don't put your kid on that kind of drug. The well-known Goodman and Gilman pharmacological basis of therapeutics reveals a strange fact. It states that Ritalin, quote, is, quote, structurally related to amphetamines. Its pharmacological properties are essentially the same as those of amphetamines, unquote. In Toxic Psychiatry, Bregan discusses the subject of drug combinations. Quote, combining antidepressants, i.e. Prozac, Luvox, and psychostimulants, Ritalin, increase the risk of cardiovascular catastrophe, seizures, sedation, euphoria, psychosis. Withdrawal from the combination causes severe reaction and includes confusion, emotional instability, agitation, and aggression. Unquote. Children are frequently medicated with this combination, and when we highlight such effects as aggression, psychosis, and emotional instability, it is obvious that the result is pointing towards the very real possibility of violence. In the International Journal of Addictions, volume 21, page 837, published a most important literature review by Dr. Richard Scannardi, entitled An Outline of Hazardous Side Effects of Ritalin. Scarnetti listed over 100 adverse effects of Ritalin indexed in the journal articles for each of these symptoms. For every one of the following selected, and I'll quote them verbatim, Ritalin side effects, then there are at least one confirming source in the medical literature. Here is what you were not told by your school teacher when the school teacher said, I'm having trouble with Johnny. I think it would be in your best interest and Johnny's best interest if he saw the psychiatrist, psychologist, because he's fidgeting. I mean, he'll look out the window and daydream. And you could say, gee, what would have happened if you would have taught Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo, Botticelli, Frederick Douglass, Thomas Cole? They were dreamers. They dreamed of what they could create and what the world could use. Would you have said, Michelangelo he's fidgeting and looking out the window. I think he should be on a drug, don't you? Yeah, well, would he have created? No. No, you only create demons. Look what we've already done to many of the great creative minds within history. We called them depressive. No, their minds are just different. But there's always something about someone who's never touched the greatness of someone who has. When you can't see the window through the window that others have, you almost resent that anyone should see through it, and so you want to paint that window so nobody can see through it. If I can't have something, why should anyone else? We resent more often than not other people's special gifts if we ourselves have not embraced our own. If we have, then generally we are very respectful and joyful for other people who have mastered theirs. Here is what you should know before you ever allow any of those individuals, including right at the top of my list are school teachers who play doctor. Behind them, psychologists, psychotherapists, pediatricians, paranoid delusions. Now, mind you, every one of these I'm going to give you has scientific references from the peer-reviewed literature. Paranoid psychosis. When you're paranoid and psychotic, you can kill someone. Hypomanic and manic symptoms. Amphetamine-like psychosis. There again, you could kill someone. Activation of psychotic symptoms. Toxic psychosis. There you could kill a village. Visual hallucinations, auditory hallucinations, affects pathological thought processes, extreme withdrawal, terrified effect, screaming, aggressiveness, insomnia, psychic dependency, high abuse potential, decreased REM sleep. When used with antidepressants, one may see dangerous reactions, including hypertension, seizures, and hypothermia, convulsions. Brain damage may be seen with amphetamine abuse. And by the way, it is very easy to abuse this. It's one of the drugs of choice. So those are just some of the side effects of using Ritalin. And you thought, no one told me that. No, did you ask? Did they tell you what would happen if you ate sugar? It's what we don't ask and we don't care about that can cause us problems. Let's take a look at attention deficit disorder. I will state categorically that there is no such thing as attention deficit disorder. Now you think, well, that's not possible, Gary. That's just stupid. You must suffer from it. Well, I didn't take a position one way or the other. I simply went in and looked at the facts. I was asked to do this by Dr. Philip J. Hodes, a man who I respect, who has spent his life dedicated to helping the underserved and who have been stigmatized. And he is there as one of those people who takes people, counsels them, and with holistic protocols. And he's done this his whole life, and he does it without consideration of financial remuneration. He's just one of the good guys in this world. And he approached me way back, and he said, Gary, there's an ongoing debate about whether or not there is a condition as ADD. And there's a whole group of holistic doctors and psychiatrists who says, yes, it does, including people like Dr. Abram Hoffer, who believes schizophrenia is real and ADD is real. Now, they do have both a combination of traditional drugs and some nutrients to treat it with. But no one has actually looked at all the literature. It seems to be self-selecting. And if you only want to look for something to support your argument, you can always find something to support your argument. And what you can't find, you can always manipulate by taking something out of context. And who's to know? He said, I trust your integrity as a researcher because I know how you've taken each topic. Would you look at this for us and present your results at a Huxley Institute forum for psychosocial research? I said, sure. As I started to look at it, I started looking at all the articles. First, it said there was a disease called attention deficit disorder. And there were a lot of articles. There's thousands. And I would take each article and I would read it. And the interesting part of this was that I kept not finding the hard proof. What I found in these articles was certain characteristics they would describe if a person took medication or did not take medication. But I kept looking for the hard evidence. Well, show me a brain that has been diagnosed as ADD. I'd like to see what that brain looks like. And having a background in public health science and human nutrition and biochemistry, I had the tools to make an honest and fair evaluation. And I was able to look at all these articles, think, my God, most of these articles are just really self-serving to justify what a person got from the way of research grants. And we all know in science that 90% of the articles that people write are generally self-serving and of little relevance. And when it comes to AIDS, almost no relevance. And cancer, about the same. So after about a year of looking, and it took me that long, I just couldn't find anything. So then I looked at any of the literature that would have challenged it. There was not much, But what literature there was made a great deal of sense. And then that led me into a whole study of eugenics and going clear back to 1906 when the state of Illinois started the first sterilization program. And then how did we end up with a sterilization program? Because psychiatrists were considering people who were, quote, feeble-minded to weaken the genetic stock and therefore spread their feeble-mindedness and what was considered the beginning of schizophrenia within the population. And then that spread to almost 43 states in the entire country by 1941 had now eugenic societies or were creating forced sterilization. In point of fact, the official sterilization of our country was an official government sterilization policy. Now, of course, if you looked at the time as I did as who was being sterilized, it was never people of affluence, never. It was never people in positions of control, educated people. It was poor blacks and migrants. And anyone of a non-English-speaking background, they were the targets. Primarily a lot of the royal itinerant workers were considered feeble. Germany then, under the right hand of Hitler, Heinrich Himmler, who had been a chicken farmer, decided that the only way to maintain racial purity was to make sure that they did not have feeble-minded people. So they started a program in 1933 to advance Aryan principles. Now, Aryan wasn't just German. They also looked at Norwegian and Polish and that entire Baltic area, which they actually took as the ultimate model. Because when people looked at Hitler and Himmler, two little goofballs, you know, they didn't look Aryan. They weren't tall, blonde, blue-eyed, you know, and strong. They were pathetic little puny weak guys. And so then they try to make it look, well, that's, you know, it's a mixture of bloods. Well, then who's mixed and who was excluded? Now, of course, then Jews were excluded, Africans were excluded, and anyone who didn't fit their model was excluded. And then they actually started encouraging a contradiction. They were supporting the high moral standards of marriage, but 90% of all the children born under a special breeding program to SS officers were for women who got pregnant without getting married. And so it was a secret because they had to keep a secret because they felt that it would confuse people. And there were about 10,000 of these children born. And so they went into other countries and actually stole children who looked as if they had any Aryan characteristics to raise them. Where did that model of sterilization come from? That model came from America. Like it or not, we created the model for sterilization. In fact, the first people sterilized in Germany, starting in 1931, was in their sanitariums, their mental clinics. And then sterilization went from sterilization to euthanasia, which was just killing them. And they killed over 300,000. So society has never had much tolerance for those people who did not meet certain academic or certain intellectual or social levels. So when it came to ADD, be very careful what you think and what you say so you do not talk with the kind of foolishness that people who have not done their homework do, and that's the trouble. People think that they know something about ADD. Well, ADD is a direct offshoot of the original eugenics programs. The people who founded eugenics movements in this country, which is a pseudo, never a scientific, a pseudoscience of trying to correct genetic defects to create a better human being, were the ones who came over after the war. In fact, some of Hitler's top eugenicists and genetic manipulators for his racial purity program headed our mental health and what was called mental hygiene program in the United States. And one of the leaders of that movement, who would later associate with Columbia University's psychiatric program, had a terrible background and should have been tried as a war crime person, but didn't. Because, once again, he knew the right people and was a tool. And they then tried to create the notion that schizophrenia was genetic and inherited, and therefore, what were the qualities of being a young person who manifested schizophrenia? Well, at that time, schizophrenia was considered the same qualities as ADD. So then later, ADD was put onto the burner as what we should focus all of our attention on. And it was easier to get the idea of ADD rather than schizophrenia into the school system. Track it back. Connect the dots. ADD, schizophrenia, same individuals, eugenics movement, final solution movement. It's a dirty, filthy background of racists and the people who are the elitists and the people who hold the sway over life and death. No one of integrity should be associated with this, but yet everybody rushed up to embrace it without questioning and challenging it, because we all wanted our little children to be just so right. Well, do your own homework. Take a look and see if you can find the abnormal brain that they've been saying exists. Look in all their literature. And then take a look at the symptoms they say will manifest and see if they're not normal symptoms that children go through. We should not misjudge moral issues, emotional issues, family crisis, normal growing issues, hormonal issues, and overstimulant issues as being the same as a pathological brain disorder. They are not. You bring me the children who are diagnosed as ADD and ADHD. Let me work with them for 2 to 3 months and see if you have the same diagnosis. Now, mind you, if they had this brain disease, nothing I could do nutritionally or behaviorally would make a difference. It's a brain disease. Why is it that all these kids I work with are normal then? Well, I guess their brain disease just mysteriously vanished. But you can't have that happen. Remember, they're saying that diet, behavior, colas, caffeine, sugar, chemicals, artificial sweeteners have nothing to do with ADD and ADHD. But I say it has everything to do with it. And there's a time when we must pay careful attention, otherwise we'll continue being misled by the very same people who've been in charge all along. What's their motive? Power, control, ego, ambition, career? Possibly. Money? Yes, that too. It's a big industry. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you very much for listening today. I'll be back tomorrow sharing more on this topic. Have a nice day, everyone.